Welcome everyone to What the Bark, the Rightpaw podcast. We're back with episode 12, and of course always joined by our good friend George, Genetic George. How are you doing, George?
Good, Nathan. And I always like to start by giving you a weather forecast of what it's like down here. It is raining in Melbourne and has been for the last 2 days, and apparently going to rain for the next 3 days.
Yeah, I think it's all up and down the East Coast. We've got some East Coast representation on this podcast because we've got George down in Victoria. I'm Sydney, raining as well. And it's a good segue, I think, maybe to introduce our two guests that are up in Brisbane. And I'm excited because we've got our first breeding couple. We've got a pair of breeders that are joining us today.
Yes, I know people don't get a visual, but we've got two. It's stereo. Let's introduce them.
Let's do it. Well, we're really excited to welcome both Lorinda and Craig Davidson from Harley & Co. Caboodles. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nathan. It's great to be here.
Lovely. And I've got the burning question. The first question I've got is, who is the Cavalier and who's the Poodle here? We've got Lorinda and Craig, which is going to be the Cavoodle. If you had to be the Poodle.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The
and for all our international guests, because I know in the US it's known as the Cavapoo, is that right?
Yep.
We're going to stick to the Cavoodle. I prefer the Cavoodle.
Rolls off the tongue more nicely.
Are you happy with that, Lorinda and Craig?
Absolutely.
Okay, no Cavapoo. Trust the Americans to just...
And Cockapoo, Golden Doodle, very strange.
But I'm excited to have our first developmental breed. People, and am I right, Craig? We've sort of stuck to the heritage breeds, and we've got our first developmental breed.
Yes, very exciting for us too.
Yeah, I think it's great. When I was thinking about this topic, and we're going to talk a lot about stud dogs, and you know the process of how that sort of mating works and pairing dogs together. But I thought it was great to bring on Lorinda and Craig because they've done such a great job with Harley & Co. The way that they've sort of been really selective about the dogs that they paired together and the focus that they put on temperament, the focus they put on even things like color as well, and it's really interesting. I think there's so much that goes into that pairing, and so I couldn't think of a better couple to talk about it.
Well, hopefully we'll say all the right things.
No, you will. So tell us about Harley & Co. What is Harley & Co.?
Well, I guess we decided to come up with a name when we started to invest more of our time in breeding. And it was my daughter who said to me, oh, and co is on trend. You have to use the word and co. So Harley is our stud boy, or one of our stud boys, our first stud boy, the father of our first Cavoodle babies. And I guess he's our mascot for Harley & Co. So that's how we came about the name.
I like it. So Co's just really all the others.
Really, yeah.
Nice.
It's a nice family affair.
I like that. And Lorinda, let me tell you, your kids are always right. They're always telling you what things to do and what thing. And, you know, and in a year's time when it works and they told you. But, you know,
that kids are always keeping us cool. And for those who just recently joined the podcast and heard a lot of the new sound effects that we've recently had introduced, which were coming up in the most recent episodes, all beautifully sound designed by George's son, Dion.
Wow.
Yeah, it's all he listens to, the start and the end of the podcast, to hear his intro and his exit. Now he's got other little bits he can listen to yet. Look, Lorinda, excellent. So Harley & Co, I like that. I like the first question I wanted to know. So it's the Co's, the rest of them. So Cavoodles, tell me how you started and why you started in Cavoodles.
I guess I've always bred dogs. You know, as soon as I left home, we had a Cocker Spaniel growing up. So as soon as I left home, of course, that's the first thing I did was buy my own Cocker Spaniel and become a registered English Cocker Spaniel breeder. And that sort of, that was just dabbling and, you know, this was the days before internet. So this is where it was really important to have mentors. And I had my aunt who was a German Shorthead Pointer breeder, and she was really helpful in guiding me through. And I guess I got to a stage in my program, I bought my first stud dog. You know, I bought this beautiful gold roan English Cocker Spaniel. He was going to be the be all and end all of my lines, and he ended up not being able to do it. He had no skills at all. He couldn't even get a tie with my girls. And I was kind of at a loss. This was the early 2000s when Oodles would be becoming popular. And my family was saying, oh, you know, why don't you do Spoodles? You know, they're, you know, no low shedding, great temperaments, have them inside, there's no smell. And, oh, this was such a hard decision because that was just such a no-no and really hard for me to get my head around, actually crossbreeding dogs. But once I bred these.
And so I want to interrupt. That's an interesting thing you bring up, the crossbreeding, because that's a lot of the negative we do get from breeders and
traditional
users
breeders,
of both.
Yeah.
Yes. And you even mentioned it yourself, trying to get your head around just the crossing of two different breeds.
I felt shame at doing this, and I kept it to myself for so long. But, you know,
well, don't be, Lorinda. It's fine. It's fine now. But back then, I could imagine. I could picture it.
This was early days, George.
Yeah. You'd be, sticking your neck out above the crowd.
Oh, absolutely. But these puppies were so divine. And, you know, watching them go off to these families, I was jealous of these families who were getting this perfect dog. You know, they had the temperament, they had the coat, they didn't smell. And anyway, I married Craig, and he had no idea about.
That was going to be my next question, was what did he know what he was marrying into?
No.
No, that's right.
And we were renting for a while, and it wasn't till we bought our first house here in Eden's Hill. You know, the first thing I looked at was the backyard and sizing it up. Oh, I could have a dog here. And then I decided researching, you know, what is the perfect dog for us? What are we looking for? We want something that will chill on the couch with us. We had a ragdoll cat. And they shed a lot. And we did not really want any more hair in the house at that time. So we wanted something low shedding, didn't smell, could sleep on the bed with us, which they do, and be just a great companion. And I researched for ages, and I talked to a lot of people. I went a lot of forums and, you know, read what people were saying.
Right.
I decided, you know, the Cavoodle was for us, you know, these beautiful little teddy bears.
Did you notice the language there? Then I decided the Cavoodle was for us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I hear that. Don't worry. Yes. We're going to get a lot. I know exactly the feeling. You know what? You know what, Craig?
I'm not complaining though, George.
Yeah, don't, because you know what? A Cavoodle's cheaper than a divorce. So, you know, it's literally bonus. And you know what? It's interesting because it was the Labradoodle that was seen as sort of came out as the breaker and the developmental breed, and that created all the real hysteria everyone sort of wanted. But I can tell you one of our largest customer base and requests is the Cavoodle. Hmm. The Cavoodle is just popular. I go to a park, Nathan, it's just full of Cavoodles.
Absolutely. Well, on Rightpaw as well, it's also the most popular breed that we have. We have the most number of Cavoodle breeders on the platform of any breed.
And I always address this with people, why? It's because you look at them, there is not one inch of aggression in them. They are the most gentle pet you could have. They could sit with a three-year-old or an 80-year-old. Mm. They can be a bit crazy, you know, in behaviour. That when you see them at a park, they're running around, and you look at them run around. They get on their back and up they go. They approach every dog. You know, that's one of the things that they can, run around like a bit of a manic. But they are the best pet. They just are, and the Cavoodle seems to be a really nice size. Tell me about the size. That they vary quite a bit, don't they? You can have
absolutely, and you can't guarantee the size because they are a crossbreed.
Great, thank
and
you.
And it depends whether you're using a toy stud or a miniature stud. But you know, we had a litter of nine with our miniature size parents, and as adults, one of those pups is now 3.5 kilos fully grown, and one of those pups is 12 kilos fully grown.
Yeah, you guys are about 4 to 12.
the randomness of those initial processes.
And you know what, Lorinda, you are perfect. Craig, Lorinda's fantastic because she keeps on referring to them as crossbreeds. People are going to say, it's interesting. You still use that terminology. I like to stick developmental breeds, but you're good. You're crossbreed. You'll see for what they are because they are a very good crossbreed. They've been designed for a particular purpose and they serve that purpose well. As I said, I go to an off-lead park and there are lots of them, lots of convertibles because they are so popular. So, sorry, Nathan.
No, I was going to say, what was your first experience with a cavoodle? Was Harley your first cavoodle or?
Our first cavoodle was a girl called Tess. We had a theme going with all our pets. They're all named after
cars.
Oh, wait a second.
So that's Craig's way of taking ownership.
Yeah, absolutely. I had to get in there somehow.
That was one of my questions that, you know, my Dion doorbell question was. Some of the names I saw, because I had a look at some of your account, you do have some of the naming behind them was, is it just cars? There were other strange names you had there too
It started with our cats. We had Shelby, Porsche and Bentley. And then we had Tess, who's Tesla, and then Harley because our last name was Davidson.
We had to put that.
Oh, Craig, see, in the end, that's tick, Craig, the name.
Oh, absolutely, George. Yeah.
And then we have Mustang Sally because we're kind of Mustang fans. Craig drives a Mustang. So.
What? Craig, geez, can I ask you, do you look at the puppy and go, this is a Tesla? Or do you look at it and go, this is a Mustang? Or do you just go, what letter have I got left? What car have I got left?
Yeah.
Look, I think it always comes down to my decision.
At least Lorena's honest about it.
Two ideas in there.
It doesn't matter.
Somewhere in there.
It's all right, Craig. You drive the Mustang.
Trying to put three dogs in a Mustang is rather difficult too. So
yeah, I don't know. Is a cavoodle a Mustang dog sort of cat dog? Craig, sit in the front seat with a cavoodle. Oh, look, anyway. Oh,
I think so. Absolutely. They're just so good, George.
Yeah.
They are. They are. They're like I said, they're a very popular breed. They're literally our second or third breed that gets testing done, and I'm sure even on the right portal they're popular. It's because they just have that wide appeal.
Yeah, the temperament's great. You know, they're lovely to be around. Yeah, they suit so many different family types. I think, yeah, you've said it all. And I think it's important to say as well, you know, right paw definitely does support, you know, responsibility across all breeds. You know, I think there is a responsible way to breed crossbreed dogs just as there's a responsible way to breed purebred dogs. And I think, you know, that point around testing and the point around pairing, the point around socialization, temperament, you know, all of these things are important across every breed. So I think that's, you know, it's, I can imagine though, Lorinda, yeah, that first cross that you did, I'm sure, you know, it ate away at you a little bit and it just wasn't the way things were done. But I think, you know, it's come a long way since then.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I have a wide, through Harley, meeting other breeders because he, you know, people have used him as a stud. We've met the most amazing breeders who are ethical and in it for the same reasons. And some of them are on right paw. Maria Manley from Candy's Cavoodle, Georgia from Family Tree Oodles, my friend Angie at Brisbane Cavoodle Breeder. We chat almost every day by message, and we're just trying to get better at what we do, better for not just our stud dog, our mama dogs, our puppies. You know, what can we do to make better puppies that are going to be the very, very best pets for families?
Interesting. So my question is, and it's, again, that doorbell Dion question is, people think it's just a straight cross of a Cavalier and maybe a toy or a miniature poodle, but it's not. It takes more than just a 50-50 cross. Am I right, Craig? Is that
our breeding stock comes from a straight cross, a 50-50 cross,
right?
But the research that we've been doing says that the way forward is multi-generational dogs.
Yep. Yep.
So we are interested in DNA results. So we're looking at the genome of the dogs. And in particular, we're looking at not only the genetic problems that that can come from the dogs.
Yeah.
But also coat type,
yeah.
Colour, all those sorts of things. So the best way forward for us in our thinking is that we breed multi-generational dogs so that we can control those genes.
Correct. Mm. Yeah, it's a really good point. And I mean, for those that aren't as familiar with the sort of, I guess, the generations, you know, we've got F1, F1B, F2. Lorinda and Craig, could you give our listeners a quick summary of how that works? What do those letters and numbers mean?
The F1 is your first cross. That's your Cavalier cross with your miniature, generally miniature or toy poodle. Your F1B is a back cross, so you can back cross to one of the parent breeds. So it can be an F1B poodle or F1B Cavalier King Charles.
Yeah.
Your F2 is a cross between two F1s, or it could even be an F1B crossed with an F2 is still an F2. And then it can get, you know, more and more complex. We kind of just call it multi-generational after that.
But and most people tend to do that. Why? You know, is it to get a particular coat type? Was it to get to a structure to the dog? Why would you F2, F3? You know, there are some Labradoodle people that infuse with some Spaniel. There are some that infuse some soft-coated Wheaton Terrier in them just to help with the development of specific phenotypes. Is that why you would do it in the Cavoodle?
We're looking at everything. We're looking at, you know, the temperament and the colours that we want in our specific line. But a lot of breeders do the F1B back to the poodle so they avoid the smooth coats.
Yep.
So with your cross with two F1s, an F1 inherits usually one of the furnishing gene from the Correct. Poodle. Who has two, and one of the improper coat from the Cavalier King Charles, which have two of the improper coat. So generally your F1 will have one of each. But when you cross them for an F2, when you do the little Punnett square, you're going to get 75% furnished, and you're going to have a 25% that are going to look like a pointy-nosed Cavalier.
That's
and
right.
generally the public are not looking for that. They want that teddy bear look with the coat. So the easiest way to achieve that is by doing an F1B back to a poodle. But now that, you know, we're doing the research, we're making sure that we're, you know, testing our puppies to make sure that they've got two of these furnishing genes so that we can look more at the temperament. We know they're going to have that teddy bear look, but we're also trying to get that the coat texture that we like and that deep red that we particularly like. That's why we're mostly going multi-generation. We don't want it to be, you know, 75% poodle and only 25% Cavalier. We want to get the balance right.
And good news for all the Oodle people, just to let everyone know that the single assays are now part of the full breed profile. So all those furnishing tests that were simple add-ons are now included. So both improper coat genes, because there's so many different genes, both curly coat genes, both shedding, all now part of the full breed profile, whereas before it didn't give you a full picture when you were just getting the full breed profile. So that's only available as of last week. So there'll be a little newsletter going. Yeah, and Nathan, just between you and me, no price increase either.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, I know. See that? Look at this. How do we make money from this industry, Nathan? I don't know. We need to be bringing Cavoodle. So it's good. I did some research, and I do know it's all about the texture. Like there's a hairy, there's a fleecy, and there's a woolly. So just to keep it simple, when you're doing an F1 cross, it's sort of the hairy one. Am I right? Sheds more. The coat looks a bit more straight. Then you've got a fleecy, which is your F2, which is more of a curly, wavy hair. Doesn't shed as much. And then your F3 that I call is just basically your woolly, does it sheds the least and has more of the poodle coat. Is that how, if I did dumb it down?
No.
Again, another sledgehammer one. I got one off Jody. What, Craig, why is it always, Linda, you could at least say it in a nice, subtle way. You're on the right track, you know, mate.
And you let him. You gave him enough rope to hang himself there as well.
I could see Craig just nodding his head and going, "Not again."
There's that curl gene as well, and you can get actually non-shedding straight coats.
Oh, okay, so nice.
We're really sorry. That's one of our.
That's okay.
And just for everyone who's listening, poor Craig had to get up to go handle that while Lorinda just sat down. Yeah. Oh, is that so? Yeah, interesting. Well, it's always a topic, you know. I always get that improper coat and the different variations in the coat type. And most people trying to get that perfect coat. Can I ask you what is the I've got in my head what I think the most. What is the most popular colour when it comes to the cavoodle?
When people are looking for puppies, our biggest request is the red, the white, the white little chest white little patches on them.
Yeah.
And they all want females. Everyone wants these beautiful red girls.
Yeah, I thought apricot, and just to let you know too, the pied will be included in that new full breed profile as well. Yeah, all apricots tend to be popular. All that white. And females, why? Why do you think they want?
I think there's just a general consensus among people that the females are going to be cuddlier and they're not going to pee on everything, like to dumb it right down.
Yeah, it could just be stereotypes, I guess.
That's not true. And especially, and maybe it's with some breeds, but we haven't found that with cavoodles at all. No. Our boy Harley is the most snuggly, cuddly boy ever.
And I want to talk about Harley a little bit as well, because I guess for those that don't live, I guess, in the Brisbane region, Harley is prolific. He's everyone knows Harley. He has a great life as a stud dog, I'm sure.
He's mostly retired now.
But he has a son.
I also like that it's another. I imagine Craig, this was your choosing of the name as well for Harley's son.
No, it wasn't actually, though we fully endorsed it.
Han Solo.
That's correct.
Oh, you're going to Star Wars now.
Yeah, well, we are Star Wars fans.
Yes. Okay. So
Han Solo actually lives with my daughter and her boyfriend.
Right.
So Craig just does all the facilitating and driving around of Han Solo. Yes. But he does live a good life with them at Tenerife on the river.
I can imagine. I guess thinking about the life of a stud dog and how stud dogs work, what makes a good stud dog? You know, what a breed is looking for in a stud when they come to you to potentially find a stud for their girls?
Firstly, looks. They're looking for. So if you haven't done your DNA research to look at colours, et cetera, there is still a little bit of a myth out there that you can tell a colour from looking at your dog's colour, which once you start getting into it, of course, is not the case.
No.
An indicator, but it's not definitely not the case, particularly when you look at both sets of DNA from both dogs.
Yeah.
So they're looking for colour, and they're looking also for temperament, and Harley has that in spades. So they're the two main things that people start to look at.
I think DNA clear is so important as well, because Cavaliers are carriers of so many things. It's really, tricky to get a clear dog, and not everyone is ethical when they're breeding, and not everyone cares what happens to their puppies if they go on and start breeding it. And, we don't want the world to have sick puppies down the line. So I think it's really important that people are DNA
tested. And you know what? It's about time we've had someone on the podcast that promotes the DNA test. And every podcast is right, poor.
Oh,
without me even plugging any banana. It's true though, because the cavoodle, they test and they screen for quite a few. The only thing they really need to be aware of is there's a number of diseases in the Cavalier that are at high end as well, and you're crossing two breeds. So the good thing is most of the diseases are recessive, so the worst you're going to have is a carrier. The only thing you may see is that DM, which is in both breeds. Mm-hmm. So we do see some positive It's then when you go to the F1s and the F2s that you might introduce the gene and produce a positive of a PRCD or some of those others. But in general, if you're doing a cross of any breed, then your genetic vigor is quite high because it's a recessive disease. The worst thing you're going to have is a carrier. And I do see your tests, and I do love how you are you also using and trying to use parentage confirmation in your program?
Yes.
Confirm, good.
Because this, I suppose this is one of the problems of having a stud dog at your house, and you can spend a fortune on artificial insemination through, you know, this line you've been planning for a year, and then someone takes their eyes off the stud dog for just a second.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have a dual sire litter that you need to test for parentage.
Oh, yes, I love those. We call them there's a sire with another smile on his face that you don't know about is the word I use. And a lot of the times AIs are the worst because they're adamant. You know, I was there, I saw the vet put it in, it was going to be, but there's always another sire. So it's interesting, multiple sires, great tool. I recommend them for anyone to use. Just simply use a DNA profile to verify. Excellent tool. I also want to backtrack, Craig, because you mentioned colour. So usually colour is one of my peeves in that I get a lot of inquiries and calls and can you help me with colour, because it is difficult to understand, especially when you've got things now like intensity, for example, which changes the deepness of the red now, which has come out. So you seem to have a hand on, I mean, if you can understand the basics, which is the poodle, then the Cavalier adds some other complexities. You don't have any weird colours like Merle or anything like that that you're trying to get into. Good, excellent.
No. Definitely not.
No, okay. So we're starting to see some of those in some of the poodle varieties, and I'm seeing some of those in the Bordoodles, for example, which are becoming popular, but they're a larger. I'm glad that you're sort of doing some research and colour, although it creates some negative commentary from some of the traditional breeders because you shouldn't be breeding for colour, but you're just basically trying to select it because it's based on what the consumer wants. Is that the reason why what is the key reason why you're sort of using and selecting the colour as well? Trying to get my...
I guess it is what people want, but it's what we want.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, you're almost designing your own. I mean, there is no breed standard, I guess, for the Cavoodle, so it's almost the lines that you want to breed and the Cavoodles that you want, I guess, synonymous with Harley & Co., it's this type.
Yep. And then getting back to DNA too, if we know we've got a clear stud, then that's half the battle. Then we know that puppies, no matter what happens with a girl, and some people don't test, we know that we can't be responsible for passing on genetic defects into the puppies.
Perfect answer, Craig. That's what I always tell to everyone when they're sort of worried about. If you've got one of your breeding stock that is clear of those diseases, you don't even have to test the other one because you can't produce a positive. You're reducing the incidence of whatever disease there is. You don't need, and it's exactly what I tell them when they're going, you just have one animal that's clear, one breeding stock, the rest you don't even have to test. And you may want to just test any pups that you want to keep to use for any breeding later on, but that's how simple it can be. It's not
and,
really.
And I guess the thing that we see happening is with Cavoodles becoming so popular, there's a lot of people who've just forked out, you know, $5,000 for a Cavoodle. Mm. Oh, I want another one. The quickest way to get one is to breed my dog, but I don't know anything about doing that.
Yeah.
And I guess this is where we've found an accidental place of mentorship and education of some of these people that we meet who are looking for a stud, but, you know, asking them the hard questions, you know, do you know what you're getting in for? Are you financially stable if your girl needs to go in for a C-section at 2 a.m. in the morning? You know, are you prepared to pay for the progesterone test so that, you know, we get mating at the exact time? Are you prepared for, you know, these puppies to be potentially unwell and the emotional journey that you go on, you know, with a sick puppy or a puppy that's passed away? Are you prepared to be feeding these puppies every 2 hours, 24 hours a day for the first 3 weeks of their life if the mother is unable to feed them.
Absolutely.
Prepared to give up work for 9 weeks to look after these
Lorinda, puppies. Let me tell you, I have, and I've recently been at got a female griffon that's not de-sexed. When she's in season, I can't cope. I'm not even breeding the thing. She was in season once, and it's like I'm at a park. I've got to watch other dogs. You know, there's a bit, you know, bit of mess left here and there. It's like, what? You know, this is just a dog in season. Could you imagine if it had puppies? I couldn't. It is hard work. That was, and I took her into work, and my buddy Stuart goes, man, how do these breeders do it? You've just got a dog that's literally just in season, and dogs are, you know, around, and you've got to pick up little messes. How do breeders do it? How do they do it? I don't know. It's not that easy. People just see the end product and think it's all simple, but there's a lot of stuff in between.
It's a full-time job.
Yeah. And I know some of the frenzy that you would have is, of course, when you have cavoodle puppies for sale, it would be a nightmare. How have you been able to make that easier? How have you been able to make this a bit easier?
Well, Craig's at home full time. So Craig is with the puppies 100% of the time. And we're very invested in our puppy culture and badass breeder programs to make these the best puppies.
Yeah, and I thought you might say, and Right Paw has made it really easy, being able to screen all the.
I was going to chime in with that, George.
I thought so. You know, I'm trying to give. I was going to put the sign up, Craig, but
put it in the chat.
You know, you're a user of Right Paw. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. You know, we have found the most amazing families. The most impressive families.
Really? And what convinced you to look at Right Paw? I'm not saying just because Nathan's here. What sort of made you reach out? For those that, what was the reason?
George is doing my job for me.
Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine said, hey, have you heard of these guys? I've recommended you. And Nathan gave us a call and told us what Right Paw was about, and we were, this sounds amazing.
Blown away.
You know, this is exactly what we need. You know, there's so many scammers out there, both ways, breeders and buyers, you know, managing wait lists. They're in such demand. It's too hard. It's too hard. How did you decide who gets these puppies?
Okay, so it filters all those real ones that you that are not real scammers, and we had an excellent podcast on scammers. I didn't realise how many there are, and there's literally five or six phony websites. And just to make the whole process of filtering for potential buyers easier?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
And does Nathan look after you, as in, like, give you a really good, you know, rate and gives you a call and make sure everything's okay, like George does Lorinda? Is that?
We feel like we're favourites.
Oh, favourite.
I think, you know.
Because you were the 11th people on this podcast.
Oh, threw me under the bus there, George. No, but look, I mean, I think the thing with Lorinda and Craig is that they've also been really instrumental in building the platform. Like, we've taken on board a lot of their feedback, their, you know, their comments, you know, how to make the platform better. You know, we've had calls with them where we've shown them even like demo versions of the site before it's actually been launched to get their feedback. So I think we've really tried to take on board and make a lot of the feedback from our community and make sure that, you know, we're building something that ultimately is going to make breeders' lives easier. So no, it's great to hear, and it's great to hear that, you know, it's, you've found some fantastic homes through the platform. So it's awesome.
And we keep in touch with these people. You know, they become part of our Harley & Co. family, and they're just outstanding, aren't they? Yeah. Like, you couldn't find better humans on the planet than these people who have taken our puppies. They make us very happy when they send us photos.
They certainly do.
Can we stay a part of these?
Oh, it's a lifelong journey, and you know, absolutely, you know, you're finding a forever friend for, you know, 10, 15 years, hopefully.
And quite a few people that have come back for a second puppy.
Second.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to sort of jump in now here, and I'm going to do the competition time.
Oh, competition time.
Lorinda, I know you're a great fan of the competition time, but as you know, people on the podcast can't enter the competition. And we're just going to clarify a few things, Nathan, because we had some people reach out and wanted to know what time zone. You know, Australia has 15 time zones, depending on where you are, if you know what I mean. So it's the time zone that I refer to is Eastern Standard Time. For those that don't, I'm in Melbourne.
So daylight savings time.
Daylight savings times, that's right. So we don't. So this is the question is, I want people to email me on the 10th of December with the car that Craig drives, referred to in this podcast. And I want you to email me between 11 and 11.05 a.m. daylight saving time. Because I had to clarify too if it was PM, if it was Western. So I've tried to make the time reasonable for our Western Australian listeners too, Nath.
Yes, I can imagine you might have had a few people.
Yeah, that would be too early for them. And as you know, I've had hundreds and hundreds email me to the competition, and so far no winners have been. It's a full breed profile voucher. Again, great value, $195. Email. The question again, the car that referred to this, that Craig drives.
Yeah, Craig, you're going to be famous now on the streets of Brisbane.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
There are some cons with the breed, and one of them that I know that I can see is grooming. There's a lot of grooming to a Cavoodle. Any sort of insight, anything you can help someone with on grooming? Not that we're going to recommend anyone, but what sort of advice? They do need grooming, correct?
Yeah, ours have a permanent booking every 6 weeks.
Six weeks.
They all get a teddy bear cut.
Oh, the teddy bear cut. You know, it's so difficult to find someone, Craig, who can do a good teddy bear cut.
It's almost like the Rachel haircut from Friends. It's like the teddy bear cut is the cut for the Cavoodle.
It's getting that right sort of texture around the eyes, which is the challenge.
Yes, it took us a little while to find someone that we could trust, and our groomer is absolutely amazing. We did have one experience with Harley where we sent him to the groomer, and the groomer for some reason wasn't available that day, and he got someone else to do it. And when he came back, we didn't even recognize him. We had no idea it was our Harley.
I think one of the funniest we heard was on the podcast where someone requested a breed be groomed to look like another breed. So it wasn't a Frankie Zavallic. Remember that one? It was
trying to make I can't remember what it was, but to look like a schnauzer so that they could get it on the flight. So it didn't look as brachycephalic. And I'm sure you're not giving Harley any mullets anytime soon.
Absolutely not.
Oh, yeah. When you see one well-groomed, there's something about them. I walk up to them and I go, oh, nice groom. There's just, it just gives them that extra. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with them not just having hair flowing everywhere. There's nothing wrong with it. If you've got it, why not flaunt that hair? Another thing that I do think they do suffer a bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, they are, you know, not a lot of breed anxious. They can be a bit of anxiety, you know, if left alone and, now, even the way you see them when you're at a park, am I right? Is that something that?
Yeah, they can be, and I think that's prevalent in most dogs. You know, they're pack animals, and that's why we've invested so much time in our puppy culture and badass breeder programs, which starts this early neurological stimulation from 3 days old, and by these techniques and this program that we use. It just strengthens their immune system. It strengthens their heart. It strengthens their adrenal systems. You know, just by simple things like you holding them upright, you know, for 3 to 5 seconds, and then upside down for 3 to 5 seconds in supine, and you know, putting them on a cold washer and getting them used to, you know, the scents on their paws.
Yeah.
Working with them with their fear response as well, and you know, getting them used to everyday sounds and socializing them properly so that they are able to be happy within themselves and be able to spend time by themselves.
Yeah, it's so true. Like it's parental selection as well. So, you know, it's nature and nurture. So as you said, you know, picking your studs that are really confident, that have great temperaments, that are well socialized, you know, DNA clear, of course, and then going down the line and saying, yeah, putting the right protocol in place, all of the right milestones. And yeah, both those programs are fantastic, particularly Puppy Culture's got a great reputation as well for any new breeders that haven't heard of it. Absolutely look into Puppy Culture as a great program for raising pups.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could What's not that name? Is that a Puppy Culture?
Yeah, it's a great program out of the US and some great videos that the breeders set up very early. I think they were first Bull Terriers is sort of the litter that they really sort of were the foundational Puppy Culture litter.
Yeah.
And
the Badass Breeder program is amazing. We've been sitting
What was that? Badass Breeder.
Badass Breeder.
Wow. Okay.
And we sit and we do these modules. You know, we listen to the videos and do these learning modules of a weekend for hours on end because we just want to get better at what we do. One of the things we'd like to do is maybe do a litter of diabetes detection puppies.
Ah, yes. That was my question because I have read they do actually make very good therapy dogs too, the Cavoodles. Yeah. Just the way, you know, just that their coat texture and everything is sort of calming. Is that, I read somewhere that they're actually very good therapy dogs.
Yeah, we have one of our dogs is a therapy dog. Working with a child psychologist.
There you go. So, yeah, I thought so.
Fantastic.
Just calming. It's, yeah.
And yeah, well, I mean, one of the things I can't not ask this question because I'm super, super curious and, Craig, you might be the person who does this, so I'm going to ask you, talk me through the logistics of how a stud mating works. Like, I'm really keen to know the mechanics, you know, who visits who, when's the time to do it, how long does it take, what are the chances of success? I know, Lorinda, you said you had a Cocker Spaniel stud that couldn't perform. I'm really curious as to how does the stud mating work?
Okay, so... usually the bitch will come to the male. The male needs to be comfortable in his environment. It's not in every case, but that's the way we certainly work. Progesterone testing is really important, especially if you're travelling to see a male. So we ask that everyone progesterone tests. And we're looking for a number over 20 for a first visit. But with an experienced stud, he will be able to detect whether she's ready to go basically as soon as she walks in the door.
Mm. Sometimes before.
Yeah.
Like he can start crying when the car pulls into the drive.
Yeah, he just knows. So then we just put them together. I stay with the dogs 100% of the time, particularly when they're tied. But I will always be there holding both dogs or just manipulating them a little bit. Harley doesn't like to be touched much while he's doing the deed. So I've got to let him go. But sometimes we may just need to put the girl on a little step or just to get her a little bit higher. But it's just knowing your dog. That's the best thing I can say is to get to know your dog. So
it's interesting because just to clarify, Nathan, this podcast is PG.
It is PG. Yeah.
I'm trying to choose my words.
I know. We have to be very careful.
Craig, you have to watch it. I think we it was at one stage I thought, oh, Craig, better just – no, yeah. It's PG.
He's been very diplomatic.
I just see it sometimes with Mary when she's actually been in that one season. They actually control when it's time too. The bitch is the one that sort of lets sort of Charlie get close and lets people always think it's the world of the stud dog. It's actually not. It's just exactly how it is in the human world, Craig. It's the world of the female. Yeah, it's, you know, they say when it is and they choose who it will be. It takes some time to warm to that particular stud dog. Am I right?
Not always.
Oh, at least he did it was not always. Okay.
But it is very much dependent on both dogs. So we've had a situation where we've had a girl come over. She will not let our boy anywhere near her.
Okay.
And that's just a dog thing. So in that instance, then we go to AI, artificial insemination.
Insemination.
We've got to the stage with our second stud that that is our preferred option. Mm. Whereas Harley, he didn't like doing AI. We tried him early on, and so we never used him AI. We've always done natural matings with him. Mm. So I think things you've got to think of is timing is critical. Mm. And you can waste the owner of the bitch's time traveling if she's not in season. So I always try and get them in the right place in a season. Mm. I always get them to try and make sure that the progesterone is right or that the timing is right. And then as you get into AI, that becomes even more important. Mm.
And is it, I mean, generally, is AI a higher chance of success than a natural mating or not really?
From what we know, it's just as good either way. Mm-hmm. The myth is that AI doesn't produce as many puppies, but our research says that that's just a myth.
Or anecdotal even. There's no science.
Yeah, behind that. Mm. As part of getting to know your stud dog, then the other question is how many times can you use him? And it always seems to go that you'll be talking to people for 6 months. They're 6 months out, right? My dog's going to be in season in 6 months. They want to line up a stud. Mm-hmm. And it always seems to work out that you'll get three people call you within 2 days. My girl's just gone into season. So knowing your dog and knowing what he's capable of is very, very important.
And this is where our reproductive specialists manage him.
Yeah.
You know, they see the quantity, the quality, the motility, the morphology of the sperm that's going in. Mm. And we know that it's not our boy's problem. If there's any problem, it'll be from the other end. But they know how to manage it to manage the amounts and the amount of times he's used.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think a lot of people out in the puppy community don't really think beyond, you know, getting the puppy. They don't think back to the, you know, those many steps that go into not only just the planning, but then the mating and then the raising. It's, you know, it's a world that not many people know much about. So I think it's fascinating, the level of detail and planning. And Craig, you know, I'm sure that first couple of times managing those matings would have been very interesting.
It was a very steep learning curve, can I say? I say to people, I've seen some things that I really didn't think I'd ever see, and once you've seen them, you can't unsee them. Mm-hmm. But it very just the whole process is really interesting, and I say we learn something new every time. Mm-hmm. Every time we have a mating, we learn something new, especially now when we're doing mostly AI.
AIs. And can I? And what's your average litter size in the last sort of 12 months? Just give me what's
from the stud or for us?
For you guys.
For us, they've been pretty small, but our girls are only sort of dropping
small
amount of eggs, and you know,
four to five.
Yeah,
four. Is the easy answer. Okay. Yeah, sorry. 4 to 5. Right. 4 to 5.
Yeah.
Mm. So from my perspective now, I've gone away and done a lot of research on the whole reproductive cycle of a dog and how the mechanics of it work, because I just felt if I was doing stud work, I really wanted to get my head around
it.
Mm. how the mechanics of it all worked.
Yeah, and I think this is, you know, one thing I'll say generally as well, obviously about Lorinda and Craig, but also about, I think, a lot of new breeders and developmental breeders, crossbreeders, is that they really do spend a lot of time researching. They don't just have a set way of doing things. I've done it for this many years and that's the way I do it. You know, you're in the research, you're following the protocols, you're doing the modules. And I think that is something that is fantastic. A lot of new breeders really want to stay at the forefront of the breeding world.
Very progressive in the way that they, and looking at new technologies, I'm not saying that in a bad way to the traditional breeders, but it's just you're using new progressive methods, looking at, because you're new in the breed. It's a new breed. You're trying to use whatever tools you can to get better success. Yes, I see that a lot, and very progressive in the way they test, you know, and how they test and how they use it. They're very positive about using technology, and you can see it in just the AI that they're doing, working with three productive vets. Yeah, you know, I agree. It's I think it's positive for them. I have a question, because behind every breed, there's a great person. So I need you to tell me of some celebrities that we should that have a Cavoodle or had a Cavoodle.
Pat Rafter.
Okay, the typical Queensland. Oh, yeah, Pat Rafter. I've got a few too. Don't worry, I've done my research. Hugh Jackman.
Oh, your ex-student on Gogglebox. He's got a Cavoodle. Yeah, do you watch one Gogglebox?
Yeah, we do. Yes.
One of the boys in there has a Cavoodle.
Okay. I think I've seen them pop up on an episode from time to time.
And I've heard, didn't Julia Gillard have a Cavoodle?
Didn't know that.
Yeah, and here's another one, Dr. Lisa from Bondi Vet.
Oh, yes, I did know that.
There you go. So, George, tick, tick, tick.
George has done his research.
Done his research, yeah, because, you know, I always like to see, you know, Hugh Jackman, wow, Cavoodle. Yeah. Julia Gillard, wow, most powerful Cavoodle.
Lorinda and Craig, one of the last things we ask all of our breeders, I guess, is, you know, this is a great platform to speak to puppy breeders and puppy buyers. And, you know, if there was one message that you could, you know, put on a billboard, share it with, you know, the listeners of the podcast in the puppy world, what would you want them to know?
Do your research.
Yeah.
Don't go into this lightly, and, you know, be prepared for heartache and disappointment as well as the joy that puppies bring, and you know, educate yourself as much as you can and talk to as many people as you can. And there's lots of us out there that are willing to mentor and share information. It's really positive community.
So we have Nathan's billboard sort of quote we like to put on them. We're going to put a book together at the end of all this, of all the so yeah, good. So do your research.
Yeah, and keep learning, as Craig said. You know, always learn something new every day. But I think, but before we let Lorinda and Craig go, we've got to have them take part in everyone's favourite genetic segment.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I gotta.
Oh yes, this is the Lorinda, because you listen. You know, this is the most important, the most educational part of the podcast. And the problem we're going to have here, Nathan, is who do we allow to pick the number?
Well, we've already talked about it.
Oh, they've planned in advance.
I know what's going to happen. Craig picks one number, the first number, and Lorinda picks the second or third number of the page. No? You've already decided what you have.
I've already decided. Mm. Very technical, this
we
one.
We could have done that. We can do that if you like.
No, I think, look, you've clearly planned in advance. So George has got the Bible in front of him, and you let us know what page we're turning to.
17.
Okay. And while George is finding that, why 17? Is there a particular story behind that?
We have a litter due on the 17th of November.
Perfect.
So, excellent choice. You've picked a neurological disorder, and one called cerebellar ataxia, which we do see in a number of breeds, in particular the Jack Russell. There's also the Amstaff, different forms, different genes. It's a recessive form of ataxia. And like most ataxias, they can progress and show signs of incoordination, head bobbling, wide-based stance, and stumbling. So these sort of diseases, fortunately, we don't see a high level of carriers and positive, because when you have a positive animal, it's just not a disease. It's not like something where the penetrance varies. When you have ataxia, you know about it. So most people remove any carriers from a breeding program. So it's recessive. There is some research. Like I said, there's now quite a few since this book was written. I think we also have another form of ataxia in other breeds, all different genes. Really, there's no cure apart from what is it? It's a granule degeneration of the granule cells in the cerebellum, and it affects the coordination and balance of movement of a dog. So disease to have.
Yeah, I've spoken to a lot of Amstaff breeders that are very, very aware of cerebellar ataxia and then absolutely do the full breed profile with Orovet to identify that. So, no, it's definitely an important one.
Excellent. So, good choice, 17, because 17 is when you've got your first what was it again? There's a that she's due for. Is that the
litter?
A litter due, yeah.
Right, and which pairing is this? Who with who?
This is Honey, and a possible.
Oh, it's a
yes.
It's a dual sire.
Yes, it is a dual sire, but hopefully will be an F1B litter with a really cute little toy poodle called Smudge or Harley.
So, if any pet owners are listening, they'll be on that right paw portal, getting in there and starting to register, because that means that, you know, puppies will be a couple of months, or, you know, can get down and get in there early. Am I right? If there's any pet owners on there.
Well, I know that Lorinda and Craig are one of our most popular breeders as well.
You must be doing something right there. There you go. I also look at it, and when I look at the right paw portal, you've got a lot of information there. Great photos, the way you present yourself, very well done. I'm really waiting for that photo of the Mustang, though, Craig in it. Before we go, Craig, can you describe the Mustang to me? I'm a Mustang lover. Anyone that had a Mustang in my time was just an absolute legend. Oh. That's what we called a badass.
He's a badass breeder.
Well, we're trying to be, yes. It's a 2017 Grabber Blue GT.
Oh, okay. It's a new Mustang. It's not the sort of, okay, the new, well, you've sort of gone down a scale. Then here I was thinking you had the classic Mustang, but it's a newer one. That's fine. It's still a Mustang. It's a GT. I know Gayan from our office loves the new Mustang GT. It's his dream car. So when I tell him, I spoke to a guy that's got one and will take us for a drive when we're up Queensland.
Oh, absolutely, George. Not done. A problem at all.
Done. It has been really enjoyable. And when Nathan said that he was able to reach out to Lorinda and get you on, it was, I thought, about time. Really, really good client. Someone who spends a lot at Orivet. No, someone who does a lot of testing. He's very progressive. Really nice to have you on. And great to have you on as our first developmental breeder on this podcast, and it's going to be the first of many we're going to get on. We love all breeds, all dogs, all pets. You know, so it's been great to have you on, and always enjoy your emails. And you are a volunteer for us as well as a collection agent, so you do a lot for the breeders. You help where you can. So a big shout out to you from Orivet.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No, it's been brilliant. Well, thank you again, Lorinda and Craig, for joining us. And I'll be sure to link everyone to some of the things we mentioned, Puppy Culture, Badass Breeder, your profile in the show notes. So we'll include all of those. But thanks for jumping on. It's been great to have you.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Fun. Brilliant. And to all of our listeners, we'll be back again next week with another episode of What the Bark, and we'll speak to you soon.